The first time I signed my name, it felt ceremonial, not important, sacred. He slid the folder across the desk without looking at me, like he already knew I'd do it. The pen was heavier than it should have been, metal and deliberate, like it expected a certain kind of hand. I remember thinking, this is how people are brought in. The room smelled like old paper and coffee that had gone cold an hour ago. Outside the window, the city was still moving, horns, brakes, a bus coughing smoke, but inside, everything slowed to the speed of his voice, calm, patient, certain. It's not illegal, he said, finally meeting my eyes. It's educational. I nodded before I knew what I was agreeing to. That nod cost me more than the money ever did. Months later, when the bank called, I didn't argue. I didn't panic. I thanked them for the clarification, hung up, and sat very still in my car. I watched my hands on the steering wheel like they belonged to someone else. That's when I understood the lesson hadn't been about finance at all. It was about me, about how easy it is to mistake permission for wisdom, about how trust doesn't need to be earned if it's framed as guidance, about how the moment you realize you've crossed a line is never the moment you still have the option not to. By the time I understood what the fund really was, the money was gone. And so was the person I used to be when signing my name felt sacred. I met him because everyone said I should. That's how it always started, advice wrapped in certainty. I was young enough to still believe there was a correct path if you listened to the right people. I had ambition, not direction, hunger, not experience. And he was spoken about the way men are spoken about when they've already been forgiven for whatever they did to get ahead. Find a mentor, people told me. Someone who's been there. He had been everywhere. That was the impression. His office walls were lined with photos that looked accidental, but weren't. Handshakes, dinners, conference rooms with glass walls and city views. He never bragged. He didn't have to. His confidence did the talking, soft and constant. He listened when I spoke. That alone felt like generosity. I told him about my plans, my worries, the way money seemed to move around me, but never toward me. He nodded, asked questions that made me feel sharper for answering them. When I left that first meeting, I walked differently, straighter, like I'd been noticed. He waited weeks before offering anything. That was his genius. He let the admiration ferment. When he finally mentioned the fund, it was almost an afterthought, a tool, a way to learn by doing. He said real education didn't come from books or lectures. It came from exposure, from controlled risk. This is how you see who you really are, he said, when something's on the line. The amount wasn't small, but it wasn't ruinous. It was just enough to sting, just enough to matter. I hesitated. He smiled, not indulgent, not dismissive, understanding. You don't have to, he said. This isn't for everyone. That sentence did more than any pitch could have. I heard a challenge disguised as concern. I heard a door that would quietly close if I didn't step through it. I told myself I was being brave. I told myself this was growth. I didn't realize I was being sized. The paperwork was dense in a way that felt intentional, not deceptive, overwhelming. Clauses folded into clauses, contingencies stacked like dominoes. He didn't rush me. That was the trick. He let me rush myself. Ask questions, he said. That's part of the process. I asked a few. He answered them cleanly, patiently. Then he explained why the questions themselves mattered less than my willingness to sit with uncertainty. He framed confusion as a rite of passage. Every step after that felt incremental. Small adjustments, harmless decisions. Each one framed as temporary, educational, reversible. He talked a lot about insulation, about buffers, about how systems absorb impact so individuals don't have to. When I worried about legality, he laughed softly. Not mockingly, but like someone amused by innocence. Rules are scaffolding, he said. They're not the building. I started repeating his phrases in my head, then out loud, then to other people. The fund moved money in ways I didn't fully understand. It crossed borders that felt abstract. It relied on timing, interpretation, discretion. When I asked where the line was, he tilted his head. Lines move, he said. That's the lesson. There were moments, quiet ones, when something in me tightened. Emails that were worded too carefully, transfers that landed too cleanly. Each time he was there to contextualize it, to widen the frame until my doubt felt small. You're thinking like someone who's never been trusted, he told me once. That's normal. I didn't want to be normal. The pressure wasn't loud. It was cumulative. Every success, every smooth transaction, reinforced the idea that discomfort was just inexperience shedding itself. When the numbers grew, so did my sense of obligation. Walking away started to feel like betrayal, not of him, but of the person I was becoming. By the time the bank flagged the account, I had already rehearsed the explanation in my head, not because he told me to, but because I knew what he would say. That realization scared me. I didn't stop. The call came on a Tuesday. Ordinary, polite. The woman on the line spoke like someone who had already said this sentence many times that day. I didn't interrupt her. When she finished, I asked for clarification. Then I thanked her. My voice didn't shake. That's what haunts me most. I called him next, straight to voicemail. That silence stretched, minutes turned into hours, then days. When he finally responded, it wasn't with denial or anger. It was with disappointment. "Did you panic?" he asked. I said no, I was lying. He sighed, the sound of someone watching a student fail a test they should have passed. "You reached out too soon," he said. "That's how you learn who's watching." Something inside me collapsed, not loudly, quietly, like a shelf giving way in the dark. The fund unraveled fast after that. Not explosively, methodically. Accounts closed, doors shut, responsibility settled where it always does, downward, onto names that were still building, not those already built. I understood then what the lesson had been. Not how to make money, not how to bend rules, how to carry weight without asking who put it there. He never told me I'd been scammed. He didn't have to. The brilliance was in the framing, that the loss wasn't a failure of ethics, but of nerve. That the pain wasn't injustice, it was tuition. I paid it, and I carry it now, not as a warning, but as a quiet knowledge. That part of me agreed. That part of me stayed even when leaving was possible, that when authority dressed itself as guidance, I didn't question the cost, I justified it. I don't talk about him anymore. Not because I'm ashamed of what he did, because I'm still learning what I did to myself. And some lessons don't end.